I first came across Mandelson in the 1980s with Tony Benn, and he was brought in to do media for the Labour Party by Neil Kinnock after the 87 election, the idea being that Mandelson would be able to start the road down towards what Kinnock called New Realism, which was the precursor of New Labour. And Mandelson was the one to do it. Mandelson is very clever, very effective media operator, in that he would have a huge range of media contacts. And he would operate on the basis that Labour MPs all thought he knew everything about them and knew where all their bodies lay and everything else, and that he could do them in at any one time. He probably didn't and couldn't, but they all thought he could. So it was all essentially a thing about presence and image. And he was very good at cultivating that, both in the media about Kinnock and Labour, and later about Blair, and so on. And so it went on like that. Mandelson was this ever-present figure. Tony Benn thought he was... Tony told me, he said, "I think Mandelson will not do any of us any good. He is not of the right ilk to do this." But Mandelson exploited his family relationship, grandfather being Herbert Morrison and so on. And then John Smith came along after Labour had lost the 92 election. John Smith did not like or trust Mandelson at all. And his role was diminished, if not removed altogether at that point, by John. John Smith died only a year or so later, which was obviously very sad. And then I just remember that day that John died. Mandelson sort of peers around the place in the afternoon, but John died in the morning, telling anyone that he could get hold of that Blair was the one. So he was plotting for Blair from the very beginning. And then development of New Labour. Now, one level, you could say Mandelson very effective in that he got a lot of media publicity for the party, and he got a lot of media interest in what the party was doing and saying. But the other side of it was, it was all about kowtowing to Murdoch and that media power, and gaining the approval of the business establishment in the country. Shortly after Blair became leader, he was then sent off to Australia to be interviewed by the Murdoch Global Board. And that was, I thought, really peculiar.
Who was sent off there? Sorry.
Blair.
Blair was sent off.
Went to Australia for a weekend.
Right.
To be interviewed by Murdoch.
Would it seem, it wouldn't seem that extraordinary that a man would want to cultivate relationships with newspapers, newspaper moguls? It's a way to ingratiate yourself with the press. It's a way to get your message out. So tell me what...
Yeah, but this is straight after Murdoch and
right.
at the Battle of Wapping. Mm-hmm. Straight after he had sacked the entire workforce of his paper. Straight after there'd been this terrible police activities in Wapping against those that were striking merely to keep their jobs. Nothing else, nothing more than that. And it was as if nothing had happened. And so it's that sort of thing that was made people very, very angry.
So what was he doing in the Labour Party then? Because this doesn't sound like the sort of the work of the Party of Workers, right? This doesn't sound like that sort of endeavour.
Well, what he was doing in the Labour Party was making sure the Labour Party stopped being the Party of Workers and started being the party of, in a sense, the kind of politics of the US Democrats, I suppose, is the nearest equivalent you can think of. Eric Heffer always said that. Eric Heffer and Tony Benn always said that, that what Mandelson and Blair were trying to do was turn the Labour Party into either a mirror of the SDP, which was then in decline, Social Democratic Party in Britain, or the US Democratic Party, or a bit of both, in the idea that you have a party which has a broad working class appeal, but essentially as a pro-business party. And if push comes to shove, then the business gets the shove.
And that's exactly what happened with the last, well, the incoming Labour government, the current government that we have here.
Yeah.
What you said a moment ago about this feeling that Manderson always knew almost where the bodies were buried, that you'd have something on someone else. I mean, what does that really mean tangibly?
Well, they would, a lot of Labour MPs would be sort of nervous of Mandelson. And sometimes they were unhappy with the methods of using technology a great deal, which he was actually very good at, and the Labour Party needed to catch up with. So he wasn't wrong there. But there was, when the Whip's office started saying every Labour MP had to get a pager, and you could get a pager, I assume, on parliamentary expenses. I can't remember. Probably you could. And then there was a joke went around saying somebody would turn on their pager in Parliament. It says, message from Mandelson, breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. That's our message for today.
Gosh.
And it was only half a joke.
That sounds quite frightening, though, that he had this sort of... It almost seems an insatiable need for control.
Yeah. And that was what it was about. And if anyone said anything contrary to the narrative the party was pushing, and going forward into the 90s, before the 97 election, I questioned the idea of private finance in public services. This magical idea was brought up that we would encourage private finance into public services in order to develop hospitals, schools, and so on, roads even. And I questioned this and said, well, actually, this is A, undermining the principle of public ownership and public control, but secondly, it's going to cost a lot of money and it will be much more expensive. And I was pretty roundly told that this, you're out of date, you're out of time, you don't understand the needs of public services and so on. And I just said, well, post-war Labour government managed a huge amount of reconstruction using Public Works Loans Board. What's wrong with that now? That is essentially 60-year loans through the Treasury with fixed-rate Treasury bonds in return, which means that you know what your public sector costs are and you know what you're getting. And instead, we went down the road of this private finance, and I was told to shut up and stop going on the media about it, and I argued back and said, well, look, you know, I just think since you're promoting these things which are not yet party policy, it's an issue of public debate. You don't have a leg to stand on in trying to prevent me speaking out about it, or anybody else for that matter. So there was this sort of atmosphere that was created, whereas previous leaders, John Smith particularly and others, didn't always agree. I didn't always agree with them. But you could take part in a public debate. I remember John Smith being leader. He came up with the Commission on Social Justice. I thought it was a conveyor belt towards reducing the role of the welfare state, individualizing rather than collectivizing, and so on, and said so. John said to me once, he said, I saw that you didn't agree with the Commission on Social Justice. I said, no, I don't. I've got a different view of things. And he said, okay, let's talk about it. So I went and spent an hour just talking to John about my concerns. He said, I think I understand what you're coming from. I'm not sure I totally agree, but thanks for your time. Well, that's the kind of leader you can work with. I don't know if you can think back and remember far enough back, 2019, I warned that the British government under Theresa May and Boris Johnson was involved in secret talks with the US on bringing in their healthcare companies and healthcare providers into Britain. I was told I was actually peddling a Russian plot, and it was all Russian propaganda. I mean, utter total nonsense. And they were just not prepared to face up to this. We now have Palantir involved. The NHS is busy pushing that every hospital bring in Palantir to manage its records and its databases. And now that database information, you think about the database, the NHS. Everyone that's ever lived or died in this country since 1948, the mm-hmm. records are there. It's gold dust for health research. It's gold dust for a big pharma. Should that be in private hands? Should that be a source of money for somebody to control it? And should we know where it's going and what sort of protections are in place? And then you look at the way in which Palantir has gained these contracts, one of which was gained during COVID, and the lobbying power of Peter Mandelson when he was the owner of the company that lobbied for Palantir to go in as a preferred bidder, didn't face competition, was given the contract by the government. And then you ask the question, what was Sir Keir Starmer doing as Prime Minister whilst on a visit to Washington, going with Mandelson to the Palantir head office? What was that about? That meeting, we've asked, a number of MPs have, repeatedly, where's the minutes of that meeting? What civil service, what cabinet office official was present when the Prime Minister had these discussions? They say they can't find the records. Well, sorry, if the Prime Minister goes on a meeting with a private sector company in another country, I think we deserve to know.
Mm.
And what was Mandelson doing involved in? And did the Prime Minister know that Mandelson actually owned the company that had introduced Palantir into the whole orbit anyway? Starmer's got to answer that. He's refused to.
Why is he refusing to answer it then?
Well, suspicion.
This sounds like Boris Johnson to me. Boris Johnson type behaviour. You know, the sort of the meetings that were not properly documented or correctly documented.
Yeah, that's right.
Surely that's beyond the realms of what is acceptable in office.
It's totally unacceptable. If you're in office and you're taking serious decisions with very large amounts of public money involved, and indeed in the case of Palantir, public safety involved because of our health records, the very least you expect it to be a formal meeting that is properly recorded and properly minuted.
What was it about Mandelson? He had a relationship with a financier that he shouldn't have had. Why did Keir Starmer look the other way? What is it about Mandelson that Starmer just felt he had to have him? Is it something, you know, I think that a lot of the public are questioning, is it something dark? Is it something covert? Or is it just friends helping friends in politics?
It's friends having friends, and it's a sort of, people get dazzled by the aura of Mandelson, his connections, his apparent success, and the apparently very lavish lifestyle he's able to lead. And that comes from all the business interests and contacts that he's built up. And so Starmer now says he was lied to by Mandelson. Well, I don't know what went on in the meeting between them. Maybe one day we'll all be told. But if Starmer was not aware of Mandelson's activities and behavior, then he should have been, and he should have been looking into it and should have been serious about it, because the damage it's done to Starmer, the damage it's done to his government is absolutely massive. And whilst he might have got away with a parliamentary Labour Party meeting the other day, it's not over yet.